One of my oldest friends lives on a dead-end dirt road in the house he was born in. I went to see him a couple of weeks ago, and he got to reminiscing about the changes he's seen in his 75 years. This is the story he told me. I can't help but notice how much things have changed around me, even though I haven't. I've had the same name now for over 70 years, and I haven't moved from the house I was born in. And this town has even fewer people in it now than when I was a boy. But my address is a lot more complicated. Highway contract number, box number, zip code, and my telephone number. Judas takes half a minute just to dial it. That's if you can remember it all without checking halfway through to see if you're still headed right. When I was a younger fella between the Great Depression and the Second War, things were a lot simpler. Just your name and the name of your town would get a letter to you. The mailman knew everybody. If you wanted to mail a letter and didn't have a stamp, you just left the letter and a few pennies in the mailbox. And the telephone numbers didn't strain your memory either. Our party line number was 24, and our phone ring, one short, one long. There were 17 families on our line, and we all had a different ring, one short, two longs, two shorts, two longs, like that. We could call each other just by picking up the receiver, and if nobody else was on the line, cranking the handle the right number of rings. If we wanted to call somebody on another line or long distance, then we rang one short. That was Central, Elsie Thayer. She was the operator, and she had the switchboard in her kitchen. You just told her who you wanted, and she'd get them on the line. If there was trouble anywhere in the neighborhood, everybody'd hear one long, continuous ring. That meant a fire or an accident. Somebody needed help. You'd pick up the receiver to find out who and where. To me, one of the worst things that's happened in America in the past 50 years is the private telephone line. The sense of community that we shared as a result of that party line is gone now. Of course, it wasn't always convenient. It was kind of like a big family with one bathroom. You had to learn to accommodate one another. And, of course, we all knew each other's business. My Lord, yes, whenever the phone rang, no matter whose ring it was, almost everybody'd pick up. You could hear babies crying, clocks chiming, maybe a radio in the background. And the more people there were on the line, the louder you had to holler to make yourself heard. Once in a while, one another of the parties would get just a bit steamed up. There was none of this soap opera stuff on the telephone in those days. The phone was for convenience only. Anybody who got a reputation for heavy personal talk, why, they'd have what the TV calls a 100% market share whenever their ring come over the line. Well, there was a couple lived way at the end of the line where the road dead-ended just under Hubbard Notch. Chisholm, the name was. They rented the old Hubbard place and farmed it, but that was an awful tough pitch, boy, and they couldn't have been more than just scraping by. No electricity or running water. They sold wool every year and swapped garden truck and syrup for groceries. Not unfriendly, but they kept pretty much to themselves. Just a pair of regular old-time Yankees toughing out the Depression on pure grit and patience. They raised three kids up there, a couple of boys and a girl. None of them stayed. Boys found work in St. Johnsbury, and the daughter married and settled in Lancaster. So the two old folks were alone up there. Their ring was three shorts and a long. Only way I knew it was by the directory card, because Lord knows I never heard it. Round Christmas time, the calls always got more interest, and you knew who was coming home for the holidays and who weren't and if anybody was having a party. And around Christmas of 1939, it turned out that things weren't too good up at the Hubbard place. I'd seen Doc Barton's car go by four times in 2 weeks, so I knew that somebody up above us was sick. Had to be at the Chisholms, or we'd have known who it was. So my wife and I kind of kept track of the one-ring calls to Central. Doc was on another line, and we found out the old man was down and pretty bad. Then one night there was a three-short, one-long ring. 'Twas the Chisholms' daughter in Lancaster. You could hardly hear her, but she was saying that she wasn't going to be able to come up over Christmas. Too busy, too far to travel, you know. "Oh, dear," the old lady says, "your father'll be so sad. Ralph and Bert can't make it either, and I know how he'd like to see you all again. Why, it broke my heart to hear it. So the day before Christmas, I was up in the field getting a tree. I cut another little one besides. My wife put up a few mason jars of soup and a casserole and an extra apple pie. The kids painted up some milkweed pods and made strings of popcorn. During the afternoon, we threw everything into the old Chevy and headed up the road. It is snowing, and there was fresh snow on the ground, but there were several sets of tire tracks in the road. They kept going even beyond Caswell's, which was the last place before the Chisholms. And when we pulled into the dooryard, there was 4 or 5 cars there already. There was lamps in the windows. Smoke was rolling out of the chimney, and you could hear people talking. Out back, you could hear a splitting maul and somebody stacking firewood on the back porch. Joe Caswell and his boy were carrying things into the smokehouse and hanging them up, and the 3 Sheehan boys were wheeling barn dressing out to the manure pile. Why, those birds had never even cleaned their own barn unless their old man threatened them with a pistol. Then all at once we heard sleigh bells, and here come Theo Corriveau and his pung, with his wife and at least 6 of the kids, and a couple of hindquarters of ensign. And all these years he'd been pretending he didn't understand English. Well, that was a party. The women were doing as well inside as the men outside. The kids were trimming the tree. Old man Chisholm was parked in a rocker by the cook stove with a brand new quilt tucked around him, sipping a cup of ginseng tea and smelling like a mustard plaster. His missus was smiling and looking kind of bewildered and helping the women to find what they needed to get the dinner on the table. Even the pastor and his wife were there. When he said grace, he pronounced it with a voice so clear you'd never expect him a-listening in our party line. We ate sitting around the table, sitting on the floor, standing by the open door. 'Twas so warm in the room. Well, afterwards, some of the women wanted to sing carols, but of course there was no piano. Ah, says Corriveau, un moment, and out the door he goes. A few seconds later, he pops back in with a squeeze box. Concertina, he called it, some such thing. All you had to do was hum a little bit of what you wanted to sing, and by God, he could play it. During the evening, the sky cleared and the moon come out, and we all drove home in a parade by moonlight, with our headlights off and all the kids hanging their faces out the windows, looking for the little sleigh up in the sky. Now, don't tell me how wonderful all these new gadgets are. I know I could pick up my phone and call London or Tokyo direct, and nobody could listen in unless he had a court order. But how I miss being able to just give my old wall phone a nice long crank, wait for about 12 clicks, and then wish all my neighbors all at once a Merry Christmas.